You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Where is the poison? The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemies? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You've made your decision then?
Not remotely. Because Iocane comes from Australia, as everyone knows. And Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. And criminals are used to having people not trust them, as you are not trusted by me, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 86 for Monday, the 7th of May, 2012. And let me start the show by saying happy birthday to my lovely wife, Katie. It's her birthday today. I am David.
That's lovely.
I thought so. We'll dedicate the show to her. I'm David McVeigh, and I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm not too bad, man. Just doing what we do, man.
Absolutely. In the middle of the night, it seems to become a reoccurring theme.
I have nightmares like this sometimes.
Podcasting into the dark reaches of the night. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we're actually doing two reviews because we couldn't get our crap together and get together to watch the same movie. So
that, and I was not going to go to your film.
Okay, come on. You might change your mind after I talk about it. We are going to be reviewing, I'm going to be reviewing The 5-Year Engagement, and Josh is going to be reviewing Get the Gringo.
Yes,
which has just opened in the States, but doesn't actually open here for a couple more weeks. So the Australians are getting this review a little bit early. But we will come back to those just a little bit in the show, because we always do like to start the show, Josh, with a little bit of... Oh, and by the way, we should say that we are still a man down. Richard is back in the country. But
nice.
Jet lag is keeping him away from us.
I think I may have seen him in the cinema tonight. We were both at a screening together, and I remember... He looked like death.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
That's right, Richard. You looked like death.
I am catching up with him in a couple of days, and he will be back on the show next week. And for the Behind the Panels listeners, yes, this week will be an actual show, not one of these pre-records that we've been doing. So that's the week ahead. We're all back on deck again. But first, we like to start our shows off every week with a little bit of what we've been watching. And Josh, I'm going to start off and say that I actually watched this week a film that I've avoided for the last few months called Sleeping Beauty, which stars that Emily Browning girl from that rape fantasy film Sucker Punch.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And Sleeping Beauty is, you know, she's doing another rape fantasy film, basically.
Oh, God, really?
Now, bear with me while I try and explain this film.
Sure.
Basically, it's about a girl who is working lots of odd jobs and what have you. It's an Australian film. Lots of odd jobs to make money, make ends meet. She ends up getting hooked up with these people who, and I'm really paraphrasing here, but she ends up with these people who basically offer services, but not sexual services, but like, you know, waiting on rich people and naked and stuff like that. And to the point where they then basically recruit her to do old man fantasies. So they basically drug her and knock her out, and then old men get to go and play with her while she's unconscious. I found this film completely distasteful in almost every way. And for a film that has copious amounts of female nudity, it also has copious amounts of old man balls, I should point out. It's just they're trying to be arty. It's one of those films that is trying so hard to be cutting edge art house that you just sit there watching it going, oh my God, what are you doing? You know? And I really, really did not like this film. Now, I know Richard has also seen this film, and he really didn't like it either. And I finally caught up with it. It's actually available for rental on iTunes, and I finally bit the bullet and thought, I better watch this. But just because there's morbid curiosity at play here. And it really is not good. So, so avoid that film.
I will.
At all costs, if you can help it. What have you been watching this week?
Well, I caught up finally with, I managed to get the Blu-ray of Kronos, which I had never seen before.
I want to see that.
Yeah, no, I've got it, and I'll loan it to you, Dave.
That sounds like a plan.
It's a curious little film. It's kind of one part sort of child fairy tale, kind of Roald Dahl, kind of a, you know, wacky and crazy, but also, you know, with meaning and reason behind it and stuff like that. And it's also part horror film, and it all seems to meld together at an M rating.
Really?
Very curious film. Concept behind it is essentially someone unearths. It's a different take on like vampirism, where it's basically he gets the abilities through an insect, which basically injects itself into you. And basically follows the story of him trying to find out what this thing is and why it offers him this interesting plight of kind of eternal life, but obvious thirsts as well. Mm. So, it's just hit Blu-ray as far as I can tell, because I just saw it on the shelf for the first time, and I immediately snatched it up. And I have to say that, yeah, I'm really glad that I own it. Like, I think it needs a couple of watchings before I really digest that it isn't. It's primarily in Spanish, but at the same time, it's also in English as well, and it's got Ron Perlman and all this sort of stuff in it. But it's just primarily kind of a Spanish film. But yeah, curious, very, very odd film. But I had a lot of fun watching it.
I've heard things about Kronos for years, and it's actually one of those films that I really felt like I should be watching, and I just haven't gotten around to it. So maybe I will finally get around to that, just like I got around to Sleeping Beauty finally. Do you know what else I watched this week? And I thought I'd throw this in here. I thought we'd just kind of bounce off each other here this time. Sure. I watched another one that we've actually been really, really eagerly awaiting. I finally saw Iron Sky.
Was it?
I'm really, really sad to say it's really disappointing. And for those who have been long-term listeners of the show know that we actually interviewed the director of the film about 2 years ago when they were here getting ready to shoot over in Queensland. And they were really nice guys, and they basically said they were looking at trying to make a dark satire in the same sort of vein as Doctor Strangelove. And I was kind of really excited, and the trailers have been really good and so forth. Now, sitting down to watch the film, it split the audience, because I spoke to a few people afterwards who, some of them absolutely hated it. Some of them actually thought it was okay. And there was a contingent of people at the back who I didn't get to talk to who just laughed their asses off the entire film. So there is an audience for this film, okay? But what I actually found with the film was that it was a bipolar movie. It was a film that was of two parts. Whenever we were with the Nazis on the moon, and for those who don't know what Iron Sky is, it's basically the premise is the Nazis fled the Earth in 1945 or whatever it was, 44, and took up residence on the dark side of the moon, and they've been plotting their return and invasion ever since. And now, in the modern age, basically, it's getting to the point where they're ready to come back and invade. Right. So that's the basic premise of it. And on the surface, and the trailers have been really good, and the film looks fantastic. I mean, visual effects and design, just amazing. Okay? You get that from the trailers. And whenever we're with the Nazis on the moon, we're talking about really biting satire, and it's really clever. And I thought, this is fantastic stuff. It's when we get to Earth and we have them coming to America in the modern age, the film falls into farce territory. And so it's got this really bipolar feel. And the thing is, the stuff with the Nazis is really clever and really funny. And the stuff on Earth is almost painful in places. There is some stuff that works. Some of the in particular, I'm not sure what her name is, but the girl who plays the Nazi woman, the star, who's basically a teacher on the moon, who teaches the children, the Hitler youth, basically about about Earth. And of course, she's never been there, but she teaches them about Earth anyway. And one of my favorite moments, and this is minor spoilers, but in my favorite moments is she shows the class The Great Dictator, you know, the classic Charlie Chaplin film.
Yeah.
And she only has a 10-minute version of the film, which is, of course, 10 minutes, which is showing Chaplin as the Hitler character, basically, playing with the blow-up ball, Earth, basically floating it around. And she's saying how this is one of the most famous and brilliant, most brilliant short films ever made about how our Führer unites the world and makes it as light as air and all this sort of stuff. And of course, that's not what The Great Dictator is about at all. Right?
Yeah.
When she gets down to Earth, of course, she sees The Great Dictator. And the words that come out of her mouth when she walks out of the cinema is, "It's so long." And it's her journey about basically waking up and really realizing that the Reich may not be as right as she think it is actually quite good. But they've got like this whole Sarah Palin as the president type character, and that's really stupid. And, you know, it's really bipolar, and it's really frustrating. And I can see what they were going for, but I don't think they succeeded.
Damn.
And I'm really, really sorry to say that, because the guys are really great who made it, and I love them, and I really love the design of the film and everything else, but I just, the film as a total didn't work as a whole, which is a bit shame. It was a bit of a shame. I was a bit sorry to see that. And you know that shot you see in the trailer with Udo Kier playing with the models, the battlefield models? That's not even in the film.
Oh,
I know. I was very disappointed with that as well. Anyway, all right, your turn. What else have you been seeing?
Well, I've had a whole bunch of DVDs dropped on me. A good friend of ours, Dave Kaziki, has been cleaning out his DVD closet due to space constraints.
Right.
And essentially, I inherited about 50 DVDs. So I have been very busy lately, rewatching all sorts of things. Dave, we all know Dave, and if you don't remember Dave K, go back to the shows where Dave's on, and you'll see the kind of films he's into. He's very action. He's very into he's into the fun. He's into the popcorn.
Absolutely.
Flicks. So it's a lot of films that I wouldn't usually watch. I couldn't give you a list. I think it'd be better that I did like a special on that somewhere later on down the track. But right now I'm just working through the ones I can stomach and the ones that I'm looking at going, maybe.
I'll make you a bet Astro Boy's nowhere in that collection.
No, it's not.
We remember what Dave's opinions of Astro Boy were.
Oh, yes.
So you'll have to fill us in as you're watching some of these.
I will. Of course I will.
That sounds excellent.
But yeah, no, so that would be the main ones. And then, of course, there's the Bargain Basement one.
Oh, is it time?
It's time,
all
Dave.
All right. Good evening, and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Well, good evening.
Good evening to you too, sir.
It's good to see you at my door, I guess. Welcome back to the basement. This week's one was slightly more pricey than my usual collection.
Oh, dear. How much?
No, we're talking 15.
Oh, wow. You splurged.
I did splurge, but it still was in a bin, and it did have a bargain sign on it.
And it had a lid on it, and it said collect on Thursdays.
No, actually, this was a funny one. This was one that kind of hit cinemas, stayed there for a while, fell off cinemas, and then kind of people just never talked about it. I couldn't find anyone that had watched it. And then eventually I found a few people that went, eh. And that was enough to at least, you know me, come on, that's enough. That's morbid curiosity on my side. It's like, if someone gives me a nah, that means that it wasn't a complete waste of money. So we actually picked up The Right.
The Right?
The Right.
Oh, The Right. I remember that. That's R-I-T-E. With
Anthony Hopkins.
That's right, R-I-T-E.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, of course, I've seen almost every Exorcist film under the sun. You know, every one of the Omen films, the Exorcists themselves, including that horrible Dominion. Fuck you, Dave, for giving me that.
I still haven't watched it. This is the Paul Schrader cut of the Exorcist: The Beginning.
Yes, and I think that it should have stayed cut on the floor in a pile.
I must watch that.
It kind of holds up in parts and then just slowly teeters off into a pit of disgusting nothingness. And to think
that that film encouraged the studio to go get Rennie Harlan to remake it.
You know, Rennie Harlan made it look good compared to this guy.
Oh, dear.
Yes, no, it is quite tragic. But, yes, so there's The Right. And, of course, The Right takes an interesting point of view because you don't get that standard look that you do with a lot of Exorcist films where you've got that already pre-established concept that you believe in exorcism. Which is an interesting place to start the film because essentially you follow a character that isn't necessarily a believer and he's actually having crises of faith and essentially gets blackmailed into staying in the church and he is sent to work under this father who's played by Anthony Hopkins. And I really enjoyed this film. I think that the thing that's very interesting about it is I think the people that went in with that the power of Christ compels you and wanting to see heads turning and green blood everywhere are going to be very disappointed. And I think that that's what a lot of people have got out of this film.
Right.
Whereas when you're watching it from a point of view of interesting plot line and interesting personalities, it's really curious because I like the fact that Anthony Hopkins' character doesn't care if the main guy believes in exorcisms or not. And essentially, for the first probably half of the time they're together, he spends most of the time trying to basically not disprove, but just sort of knock around his theories and beliefs. And the interesting thing is, as the film continues, I'm sure you can imagine, things get more and more intense, and then you get to your final exorcism like you do in pretty much every film. So there are a lot of similarities in the films. It's not groundbreaking in the direction it went, but I really loved, like, they'll have an exorcism session. And of course, because you're using camera work, everything does look pretty intense and pretty believable. And then he'll walk out and the guy will be like, yeah, well, this could have been that. And, you know, Anthony Hopkins kind of just looks at him and goes, oh, that's what it is. All right, okay, fine. And just, you know, sort of like potters off. But it's really I really enjoyed it. I think the performances are decent. I think that it's a tad over dramatic, but that's kind of where it has to go because it's trying to sell you on the craziness of what these people do and these people that think that they have, you know, think, because a lot of the time until kind of the last moments and even that, you're never really sure if any of it's real or not. It's all done with kind of camera works and dramatic effects and music and stuff like this. So it's all almost more about what you're seeing being disturbing or uncomfortable more than it is about being, you know, destructive and like, you know, sort of windows shattering and, you know, like demon voices. It's like you get some of that, but it's more focusing on just the fact that, you know, whether or not you believe it, this stuff still happens and religious people do get this fanatical and some people may be putting it on, but some may not. And that was just a really curious way to play a film. And I really enjoyed it.
And did Anthony Hopkins sleepwalk his way through the film or did he actually act this time?
Well, the problem with this role, Dave, is that his character is kind of a sleepwalking kind of a person.
Right.
So you can't really blame Anthony Hopkins for this because essentially his character is somebody who practices an art that no one believes in.
Well, that's true.
Essentially it's kind of like he's a very down, very discouraged Christian exorcist. Like, you know, he's very downtrodden and he's not very aggressive unless he needs to be, which is always in the scenes where the exorcisms are happening.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, it's a film I've actually wanted to see for a while, and I have actually looked at it on the DVD racks quite a lot, and I keep thinking, I should watch, and I just haven't. It's one of those ones that's not leaping off the shelf at me. So maybe after that I might actually have to look at it.
Yeah, check it out. See what you think.
Yeah, it could be interesting. All right. I always love the basement.
I think we should probably close the door.
But though, I think it's time to go.
It's getting cold.
All right. Josh, you still with me or did I lock you in?
No, I'm good. Okay. I was on this side.
Okay, cool. All right. So we've got two feature films we're going to cut through really quickly. Neither of us have seen each other's films, so this is going to be kind of interesting, I think. I'm going to start us off and basically say that it's a big film that's opening this week, actually, so we'll talk about this one really quickly, which is, of course, The 5-Year Engagement, directed by Nicholas Stoller and written by Jason Segel and Nicholas Stoller. Now, if these names are all very familiar, this is because this is the team that did Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And it's in the same kind of adult humor. It's also produced by Judd Apatow. Of course it is. And it stars Jason Segel and Emily Blunt, who, you know, I'm madly in love with. And this film actually goes a long way to, like, you know, solidifying my love for her, because she's lovely. It also stars Chris Pratt, Alison Brie, Lauren Weedman, Mimi Kennedy, David Paymer, Jackie Weaver, funnily enough, Australian connection there, Eric Scott Cooper, Jim Piddock. A lot of these people are not household names, but they're all character actors that you will recognize when you see them. And basically, according to IMDb, their synopsis basically says, 1 year after meeting, Tom proposes to his girlfriend, Violet, but unexpected events keep tripping them up as they look to walk down the aisle together. And that's the basic premise of this. So the basic premise of this film is that they're madly in love with each other, and he's a very successful chef in San Francisco, and she is a psych major, basically, and she's looking for her dream job in a university, and she's really hoping to get one at Berkeley, but, you know, as it goes on, you know, she finally gets her dream job, but it's in, I think it's Michigan, that they end up having to move to, and he has to give up his career, and he basically says, you know, we'll delay the wedding, that's fine, because we'll wait the 2 years of your contract, and then we'll get married, and of course, one thing leads to another in this film, where it keeps getting delayed, constantly getting delayed, because she'll get a promotion and therefore she has to get another year or what have you. And it's this comedy, this wonderful comedy of errors, where basically as each step goes and this thing is getting delayed, basically you can see their relationship kind of falling apart because they're having trouble. And it is kind of a, you know, ballsy adult humor. And it's got some really, really funny stuff. Let's have a look at the trailer and we'll come back and we'll have a talk about it. Because it's not all roses here. So I will talk about a few things I didn't like about it. So here's the trailer for The 5-Year Engagement.
Violet, I love you. Will you marry me? Yes. She said, I love you, boy, I love you so.
Oh, my God. Oh, oh, oh. This engagement party is a moment to celebrate a new future, but not without first exploring a past.
Jenny, Newman, Greta, Kay, Anna, Pena, Lizzie Gray, this Korean, that Korean, and Lizzie Gray again.
Okay, that's enough. Friend. I think that's enough, right?
I got a letter from the University of Michigan. I got a job for 2 years.
2 years is nothing.
Really?
And we'll start planning the wedding again from there.
Babe.
We both know I deserve to get super laid for this.
Do you want me to wear a cape or something?
I want the show.
You get the Cirque du Soleil of shows. What's of this? And this stuff. It's gonna be fun.
Woo! How's Michigan?
Oh! Oh, it's a fire hydrant.
All in all, it's an adjustment.
So here's our guest list, like 600 people.
No.
Maybe just we.
You don't want to get in front of this train, but.
Have you two picked a date yet?
Not yet, but within the year.
Congratulations, you've been promoted. You're gonna be with us for a few more years.
Can't wait to tell Tom.
You told me that it was going to be 2 years. It's sort of like when you're on a treadmill and you tell yourself, I'm going to run 5 miles today. And now it's forever miles.
When was the last time you were on a treadmill? Sorry. This is supposed to be exciting. This is your wedding. You only get a few of these. Well, I
wonder. Of course, the men will wear yarmulkes.
Babe, you don't have a yarmulke.
I have a hold. It's in my Jewish drawer.
I don't think we can figure out all of our problems before we get married, but I promise you that I will just love you every step of the way.
Any ideas when this wedding might happen?
Grandparents do have a tendency to die.
Mom, they're all right there.
Well, for now.
This is why we do not delay weddings.
The 5-year engagement.
What a cute little flower girl you'll be.
I'm Pocahontas.
Okay, a couple of sight gags you don't actually get in that trailer on an audio show, but the grandparents is actually one of the running gags throughout the whole thing, because as it's delayed, they keep dying. And so, and so every time they talk about the grandparents, we suddenly cut to a funeral and another grandparent has kicked the bucket. It's very funny and it's got some really funny moments. And let's face it, the what we were banking this film on is the charm of Jason Segel and Emily Blunt and the chemistry between them. And that works in spades. They're both very funny people and it's a very believable relationship. And so you have no problem buying that. The problem with this film, and I should point out one of the names I didn't mention, you hear him in the trailer there, is Reese Ifans, who we both really liked in Anonymous and other films he's been in. Reese Ifans is really good in this. He plays basically the professor who she works for in Michigan. And he's of course playing the lizard in the new Spider-Man film that's coming up. The problem with this film is the same problem that almost every Judd Apatow film has as a producer, which is it's too long. And it's true though. And the problem is that ever since The 40-Year-Old Virgin came out, where we went, oh look, an adult comedy that actually runs for like 2 hours and 20 minutes is worth it, and audiences will go to it because if they made huge amounts of money. But each one of his films is well over the 2-hour mark, and this film sags in the middle. And it's got a really strong premise, a really strong start, and it's actually got a fairly strong ending. But in the middle, the whole part where he's kind of disintegrating into you know, this mess because he's not living the life he wants and she's getting everything she wants, goes on too long. And so where we get some great sight gags and we get some great humor out of the fact that he's basically losing his mind, which is quite funny, it drags. And so you sit there going, okay, I got the joke. Can we move on now? You know, we've got that part and we're just kind of milking it for all it's worth. But as a whole, the film is actually really charming. And I actually really enjoyed it. And it's a great date film. Because guys are going to get a lot out of it because it is funny and it is kind of bawdy and it is kind of rude. And girls are going to love it because of the romance. And so it is one of those really, and it's one of the things that the Apatow films do very well. Things like Knocked Up and 40-Year-Old Virgin, where you go, yeah, you can actually make this a date film. Everybody's going to get something out of this. Forgetting Sarah Marshall was perfect in that sense as well. So I liked it. I liked it a lot. And I would actually recommend it to people. I'm not going to say I don't think it's as strong as previous Apatow films. I don't think it's as strong as Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I really enjoyed. But it is a film that I would watch again. And I will definitely watch it again with my lovely wife, Katie, because I think she'd really enjoy it.
Oh, well, that's good.
So I think that's really where it comes down to. I mean, these sort of films, they follow a formula. And then they play with the formula. And the ones that don't work are the ones where they, how do you put it? The ones that don't work are the ones where they either say, oh, we want to work against the formula. And that's always a dangerous path to walk because, as my wife, who is a big fan of romantic comedies, would say, they watch it for the formula. If you mess with the formula, then they get mad at you. You know what I mean?
And, yes, they do.
And there's the next stage, which is if you play too much to the formula, then it just becomes boring. And you really need to have exactly the right leads to be able to carry you along that path. This is why, and you know, love him or hate him, but this is why Tom Hanks' Meg Ryan romantic comedies of the late 80s, early 90s were so popular, was because you believed the chemistry. And this is why a film like Fools Rush In, which had Matthew Perry and Salma Hayek, which followed the formula to a T, didn't work because you didn't believe their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it falls apart. And in this, you believe their relationship. You can believe these two are together. They're as nuts as each other. And because of that, you can see the attraction.
Right.
So, and that works in that sense. So anyway, yeah, so five year engagement. It is worth seeing. It is worth your money. It's a good date film. So yeah, go out and see that. And Josh, you've got another one for us. Slightly polar opposite.
Yeah, just a tad.
I've got some details here. Would you like me to read them?
Sure.
All right, so we've got Get the Gringo, which is directed by Adrian Grunberg, and written by, which I didn't realize, written by Mel Gibson. And Adrian Grunberg. And oh, hold on, then we got one more credit here. What am I missing? There's one more credit here. Oh, yeah. And Stacey Persky. Now, it stars Mel Gibson, Peter Stormare. Oh, I love Peter Stormare. Dean Norris, Bob Gunton, Kevin Hernandez. Anybody else of note that I should be bringing up here? It doesn't look like it. Looks like a lot of people, I don't know their names.
You will get a lot of that.
Denise Gossett, I don't know a lot of these names. All right. And according to IMDb, our ever reliable source, a career criminal nabbed by Mexican authorities is placed in a tough prison where he learns to survive with the help of a 9-year-old boy. Really?
That's a very strange and very loose description of this film. It's the most bizarre concept for a film and works perfectly as a vehicle for Mel. Let's not beat around the bush here. Mel has done the Tom Cruise thing.
Multiplied.
That's fine. But I like to call it, when we're talking TV shows and films, we say jump the shark.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say stomp the couch.
Stomp the couch. There you go.
And Mel Gibson has definitely stomped the couch.
Right.
And ever since that moment, you suffer from the same problem that you do with a lot of Tom Cruise movies now, where you can't see through the crazy.
Yeah.
And it's tough because it's like, unless he's really playing a role where he's playing crazy, Tom gives off crazy. And mm-hmm. you can feel the crazy even when he's trying to emote or do a really down-to-earth kind of a moment, and he really can't sell it.
I've actually got a bit of trailer here. Do you want to have a look at this?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that before I kick in.
I got a little bit of trailer, so let's see if we can see a bit of crazy Mel here. Hold on. I haven't actually watched this trailer, so let's have a look.
Dear Mom, I'd been under a lot of stress at work. And I come into a windfall of cash. So I decided to take that Mexican vacation I'd been planning. Now, despite what people say, I had no trouble whatsoever getting across the border. Some nice people were there to greet me when I landed.
What's your name?
Bosa. Dennis? Ruben?
I got some great snapshots. And they recommended a reasonable place for me to stay. It wasn't 5-star. But someone had stolen my cash, so I told them to charge me.
Shoot, puto!
There were lots of fun activities. The different sights, sounds, smells of a new culture. There was plenty of interaction with the locals. And Mom, I think I met someone special. Wow, she was Capricorn. She has a kid.
Cigarette?
No.
I think he was beginning to warm up to me.
Well, I guess you are special. I need a spotter. You up for the gig? Hey.
But wouldn't you know it?
Something stinks about you.
You are pushing my leg?
I wouldn't push your leg. Even though you're having a blast.
Where is my money?
Cut a toe off.
We already did that, boss. Two of them.
If it's not one thing, it's another.
He killed my father!
Problems crop up.
I never know. When they come for my son.
Trouble in paradise.
Yeah, well, we're not gonna let that happen.
If I want my trip to go smooth, I gotta nip this stuff in the bud.
And you're not gonna leave me like this, are you?
Well, Mom, I can't wait to get back. Who am I kidding? I'm not coming back.
Gringo!
Gringo, gringo.
What an odd little trailer.
That's a horrible trailer. That's not the film I saw, not at all.
They make it look like a comedy.
I think that might be them trying to push this whole summer vacation title that it was originally.
Yeah, we should.
You know how it went through that change, where it was like.
We should point that out, that there was an alternate title to this film called Summer Vacation, which is just a bizarre title for this. Anyway, there you go. There's Get the Gringo, the trailer. I hadn't actually seen it. I mean, it just looks out of its mind.
Well, I'm not going to lie. That's definitely there. As I was saying about Mel, Mel has definitely stomped the couch. And the thing about Mel is that this is the perfect role for him right now, because essentially his character is very very off the wall, very left of field. But what I like about it is, unlike what that trailer sells, the thing's actually a lot more grounded than that. Like, it is still a little bit off its tree, but it's more just really fast-paced and really intense. Mm. It follows, as you can see in the trailer, Mal, who plays the driver, and essentially his role in life has basically been to be a career criminal. That part they got right. But the thing that's quite interesting about his story is that essentially we start off at full gear, blasting off to the along one side of the Mexican border, as he's got cops coming from both sides, essentially coming to nab him. One side, crooked cops trying to get money that he has taken, and the other side being, well, the Mexican border. So, you know, he decides to take the best of two options, jumps the border, lands, and ends up in Mexico with his money taken away from him by the corrupt cops and then thrown into jail. And essentially, this is all done through narration more than anything, but done really well. Like, it's still that style, and it does tend to get a little corny at times, but the pace is really good on this, because the second he hits the prison, Mel just sells the fact that he is a dirty, slimy person, that even though, you know how every single one of these fish out of water situations, it's like the comedy and all that sort of stuff comes from the fact that he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
This is the complete opposite. This is him just walking in and figuring out every step of the way what he needs to do to get back out and what he needs to do to fix his current situation. And everything else is just side gags and storyline that kind of adds on to the end. So that's why I really don't like that trailer, because I think that the real key selling point to this film is it's just so interesting to see a film where Mel doesn't come in and play the, oh my God, I'm in a crazy situation. He comes in and goes, right, I need that, so I'm going to set this on fire so that everybody's looking that way while I go and steal it. And he's just that good. Like, at no point in this is he really – he makes some risky moves and does some very Lethal Weapon-esque moments with some of the crazy shit that he gets up to while he's in this prison. But even the prison itself has character, because it's this bizarre place where, like, even though they're inmates you can pretty much buy anything inside the prison if you have the right money for it. It's an absolute war zone most of the time, but everything kind of just lives like a very small, very compact, normal life.
Right.
So it's just like living in a slum town.
So it's more like an internment camp than like a prison.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still prison guards, and there's still no way of getting out unless you're supposed to, and all this sort of stuff. But then there's hierarchies inside the prison. It's like there is a lot of depth to this film, and I think that's really what makes it work, is the fact that you start getting attached to not Mel's character, but just the interesting journey this character is taking. You never really like him as a character as such. Like, he's not really – he doesn't have many redeeming qualities.
Sounds a bit like Mel himself.
And that's the thing. This is why it works, because I think that he's – whoever was in charge in casting this film has really picked Mel as the perfect catalyst, because Mel has these moments of intense, angry, crazy that may not have even been acting. But the thing is that it's so well disguised behind this awesome – crazy story that you can kind of believe it a lot better. And then on top of it, like, you've got the storyline that you kind of see moments of in that trailer where there's this 9-year-old kid, and it's not necessarily that this kid is a game changer to the situation, but it's kind of a side story.
Right.
And the two stories do end up, you know, reconnecting kind of at the end, but it's not like that's the main part of the story. And I don't like the concept where it's like he teaches Mel. Mel is perfectly comfortable. Mel just comes to this person like you would with anyone in a prison, asking questions to try and figure out how certain things run and stuff like that. So it's more information gathering than, you know, him being saved by this 9-year-old boy that teaches him the right ways. It's a really bad way to sell it. As a whole, great moments that really sold me. Mel does an amazing impersonation of Clint Eastwood in this film, and there is moments attached to that which you will love as well, but I won't wreck it.
But also, it's just the breakneck pace. I can't stress that enough. That's what's going to make you want to keep watching this film. Is
it
essentially
actually
the
sounds
fact that,
right up my alley. I really, I'm listening to you talk about
will,
it.
You will love this. It's basically like, I wrote in a review recently, I said, it's like Ocean's 11 if George Clooney was a tattered up psychopath. like it almost has elements of a heist film, because it's almost like Mel's plotting to get his money back. And that's really the essence of the film. Everything else is just him figuring out the in-betweens or dealing with the in-betweens.
Fair enough. That sounds great. I want to see it.
Dave, this film is so you.
I'm gonna have to wait 3 weeks before I can see it. So when it comes out, I'll go see it and I'll let you know what I thought.
No, that's great.
Yeah, that sounds good. I really want to see it now. I was supposed to go to the preview. I was booked in. I couldn't go because I was working. And yeah. I was really, really annoyed by that, because I actually really wanted to see that one. That's good. All right. Excellent. All right. Anything to add?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Let's sum up our movies. I'm going to say I would recommend the 5-year engagement to friends. I think most of my friends are probably in the right age bracket for it anyway. You know, we're all like, you know, married, middle class. What can I tell you? Would you recommend Get the Gringo?
I would, actually. I think that... there's very few people that couldn't at least get some fun out of this film.
Cool. Excellent. All right. Well, we need to move on. And before we get to our list of five, we've got feedback, Josh. Feedback galore, actually. So let's just kick through some of this feedback, and we'll say that our friend Michael Wheeler, or Mike from Canada, has written to us. It's been a long time.
It's Mike?
Mike.
I haven't spoken to Mike in ages.
I know. Mike says, good day to all the Joshicles and all the Endeavor species. Okay. How about lists of five films to feature non-comic book origins? For example, this could be Dumb and Dumber or Tree of Life. He says, or a list of five films with four letters in the title. That's almost a challenge, you know that? Or list of five films where the name of one of the characters is named Josh, Dave, or Richard.
Well, it's good that he's at least filling up the pot, I guess.
Absolutely. He says, have a great day. And at the time of writing, this only 238 days until Christmas. Mike from Canada. Thank you, Mike.
Always love your random comments.
Now, I was actually talking with Mike on Facebook, because Facebook has redesigned everything. You've noticed that they've got this timeline feature and everything now. I don't know if you've been looking at Facebook lately. But you know how Mike did all that work and put all of our lists of five in the discussion boards?
Yes.
They're all gone. The discussion boards got taken down from Facebook without notice when they changed the timelines.
Typical.
So we lost all of our lists of five. So we're going to have to go back and kind of recompile our list of fives from all of our notes and episodes and so forth. I'm really annoyed. Anyway... we got an email here from Rachel. Remember that name? She's from Funky Films Radio Fremantle on radiofremantle.com, and she still listens to us. Can you imagine? She does the review show Funky Films, and she's actually written and says, hi guys, long time since I've emailed. I got a bit behind listening to podcasts, just realized Josh has upgraded to fiancé status. Don't know when this happened, but congratulations. I have actually become a fiancé myself, she says. Oh,
well, congratulations to you too.
Absolutely. She says, my lovely man Chris proposed on the 16th of March after only 7 months, but hey, when you know, you know.
And don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Damn straight. She says, I'm disgustingly happy and I cried. So congratulations to you, Rachel. There is more to the email, but she actually wrote to us a second time. So I think we'll move on to the second one and say, she said, hi guys, for the second time today, catching up with podcasts. So my co-host Lewis is a massive Marvel comic nerd. Captain America was the first comic he ever bought. So of course he loved the Avengers. He gave it like 25 edgies, our scoring system. Named after the Edgerton brothers, after seeing The Square. We normally score out of five, by the way. So out of five edgies, he gave it 25. He said, so I saw it also and gave it only 4. I think because Lewis saw it before me and talked it up so much that I was in the end disappointed. And Lewis did this for Iron Man 2. He also said, I didn't have to see Thor to get the film. I feel like I could have appreciated things a bit more if I had seen it before. I agree. I think you should have seen it. I think he was wrong. I think you need to see all 5 films leading up to it, because each one has little Easter eggs going for it.
Not in the Easter eggs. It's also that you have more attachment to each one of the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Thor just kind of shows up in the Avengers, so you kind of have to have that backstory to him. He says, I feel like I need to see it again. If not after listening to you guys talk about it, I need to see it again. If not, for the Hulk and Iron Man lines. I agree 100%. We've actually got, Hulk news in Geek Action News. So make sure you listen to that as well, because there's some stuff came up about that today. Actually this week, I should say. Also, to get that gooey I love you Joss feeling when I hear particular lines or watch certain scenes, Hulk and Tony Stark totally own this film. Absolutely. Agreed. I've loved listening to the clips on your show. I'll be rewatching all Marvel movies and Thor, then going to see the Avengers again. Very good call, Rachel. P.S. I did, however, feel there wasn't enough Captain America in the Avengers movie. I love the Cap movie so much, and I think because it was so Joss and it was a period piece, but I loved Captain America's excited response to the flying monkeys reference. A great line in the film. A great line. I was also reminiscent of Anya from Buffy. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yes, that whole out of step feeling. Getting excited to finally get a pop culture reference after not getting any. Anywho, thanks again, Rachel. I agree. And it's funny because she brings that up, because Joss had made a big point about the fact that he'd written the script kind of from Cap's point of view. And I actually didn't see that in the final film.
I think that maybe there was balancing issues. Again, I don't think he would have had full control. It would be nice to think that he does.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't think it's actually holding it against the film. I just think it's interesting that I didn't get the feeling that he was going for, but it didn't matter anyway. But I agree with her. I think the Cap needed a little bit more fleshing out. But then again, you've got the whole Captain America film, which is awesome. All right. And we have a Skype line. Remember that Skype line we promote every show and nobody ever calls? Well,
yes,
if you actually call that Skype line, you might sound a little bit like this.
Hey, guys, this is John. Loved your Avengers review show last week. I echo your sentiments on the movie exactly. It's absolutely epic. And you read out the first ever email I sent you. I'm honored. My favorite part of the Avengers is the Bruce Banner, What's Your Secret scene. I won't spoil it, but that scene was incredibly awesome. Great movie overall, and is now my favorite superhero movie. Now, I've had an amusing idea, but bear with me. Josh is the film actually Hulk. Normally, he's an intelligent, everyday film reviewer, but when confronted by some of the more crappier movies, goes on a rampage and has to destroy them. Also, when the words Wolverine movie are mentioned, his eyes turn green, and he's like, Josh, smash! Love you, Josh. Great show, guys. Keep up the great humor and the witty banter. And to those who listen to this podcast, please donate. Let's get these guys to Oz Comic Con. I want to hear them interview Stan Lee. Take care, guys. Ciao.
Damn straight.
Oh, dude, you are freaking great. That is amazing.
So, Josh
Smash. Been described as the Incredible Hulk of reviewing, but there you go. I just did.
Josh Smash. I love it. So thank you very much, John. And anybody who wants to hear their voice on the show, send us a voicemail. 02-8011-3167 is our number, or you can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word. And that's feedback for the week. Let's do our lists, because for a 45-minute show, we're already at 46 minutes. So this week, we're doing 5 great parodies or satires. It was kind of came to me after watching Iron Sky, funnily enough, and I was sitting there going, it's trying to be a satire. It's trying very hard to be a satire. And I started thinking, well, what if we did 5 satire films? I thought, well, you know, parodies and satires are 2 different beasts, but they kind of are interwoven. Mm. And I thought, why not? Let's do 5 comedies, 5 great parodies or satires that we can recommend to people. So, Josh, I'm going to let you start. I think we're probably going to have some crossover here somehow.
No, you go first, Dave.
All right, I'll go first then. My number 5 is actually a film that was mentioned by Alexis a couple of weeks ago, actually, is The Princess Bride, which is, I think, a perfect satire of A, romance, and B, fairy tales. And I think it is a masterful stroke. And of course, we opened the show with a clip from The Princess Bride as well. He made me think about it a lot over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I think that falls squarely in the category of a film that people must see. Josh, you're number five.
All right, well, this is really the only comedy on my list, which is Hot Fuzz. It's a well-rounded look at kind of, everything that's funny about kind of action movies, from both a cool perspective and also from a this is a bit ridiculous respect, which I think is both very cool.
I agree. No, I think Hot Fuzz is great. I actually am ashamed that it's not on my list. All right, my number four is actually a film that you brought up a few weeks ago. Actually, it was a different kind of list, but it made me think about it again because my number four is The Running Man, which is a satire, very much a satire and statement about media, American media and American television and a game show mentality in particular, which I thought at the time, it's very dated now, but at the time I thought had something really interesting things to say.
Certain aspects of it are almost more
I think the topic is still relevant today. I think the film is very dated.
but it kind of needs a bit of an overhaul, huh?
It does. Actually, if you know, I'm not a huge one for remakes and stuff, but I'd like to see The Running Man remade.
Yeah, no, I actually would. I think that would be a great idea. But I mean, essentially, like, it's kind of, isn't that sort of what they were trying to do with Hunger Games and failed?
Kind of, yeah, but I don't think Hunger Games was kind of going for the satire aspect of it as much.
That's true.
Whereas Running Man was really having a stab at it. I mean, even the fact that they actually hired Dawson, who was a game show host, you know, to basically parody himself, I thought was a very clever move. Your number four.
My number four is Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, just a great look at kind of more mentality and sort of, all things around that kind of commercialism and everything about it.
Yeah, I thought Romero is very clever. He took a lot of social commentary and threw it into this zombie film. And if you were looking at it as just a zombie film, great fun. You look at it deeper and there's a lot more there.
And it was interesting because we were both of that kind of a mindset where you watch this movie and you're like, there's a little bit more here than just violence.
There is. And I think it's actually one of the things that Zack Snyder's remake is missing. And I think as much fun as Zack Snyder's remake is, I still think the original Dawn of the Dead actually had something to say. And very much like a lot of Romero's films, they have something to say when you dig underneath the pop culture facade. So I agree. I think it's a very good choice. My number three is actually a late addition to the list. I just changed it out because I completely forgot about it, which got to be Wag the Dog.
Nice.
Which is a great film. And if you haven't seen it, it's basically about a spin doctor who makes up a war to win an election. And it's really biting. It really is a biting film and well worth
I think it's probably one of the most biting films out there.
Yeah, it is. And it's well worth having a look at if you haven't seen it. I know a lot of people didn't see it because they just didn't understand what it was. And I think it now, especially with a few years and looking at the time it was made, it really was, it was taking a jab at the entire administration at that time. Very good film. Your number three.
My number three is the horror fandom coming out. We're going to talk Scream.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, look, just a great look at kind of, we had been through, almost 10 years worth of kind of like horror fans growing up. And it was just so weird and interesting to see them kind of like, take a look back at all of the stuff that had come out and kind of be like, look, as much as we love this too, this stuff does tend to have some relatively biting things that it need to be looked at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Horror.
I think we really need to look at with Scream. I mean, there's so many things in Scream, but I mean, one of the glaring standouts of that is the guy who simply goes through the rules of a horror film and basically lays it out, saying this is how it's going to happen because this is what horror films do. Because everything had fallen to that kind of cliche at that point.
Exactly. It was an effective film for both, sort of attacking the way that we made the films, but also left kind of a reminder of the reasons, the things that really worked.
Yeah, and on the flip side, was just a damn good horror film all on its own. Very, yeah. very clever film indeed. I'm going straight into parody territory now, and I'm going to say that that's the only outright parody on my list, because I think it's the only outright parody that worked from top to bottom, beginning to end, and still holds up today, which is, now it's got two titles. So in Australia, it's called Flying High, and in America, it's called Airplane. And it's basically the Zucker Brothers' huge debut. They had written Kentucky Fried Movie beforehand, but this was their film. And this was just an absolute outright parody of all of the airport movies that have come before it. And genius. Just absolutely genius in every way, you know, with every line from you know, Billy, do you like gladiator movies? to what can you make of this? Oh, a brooch, a hat. It is just so clever. And that's when I discovered I had a drinking problem. Josh, your number two.
My number two is Starship Troopers.
Oh, I forgot about it. Oh, my God.
How could you?
I know. Come on, how seriously. Could I? Slap myself across the head.
Like, it's just one of those films that kind of is basically entirely about that sort of a thing. It's just essentially a look at everything that is fascism. And almost
medic
situation of it working, which is even more terrifying.
The funny thing is, I think the reason why I forgot it off my list is because I actually don't like it as a film that much. And the reason I think it's visually fantastic, I think the special effects are probably second to none. I think it's got some great stuff in it, but I'm a huge fan of the book, and the film is not the book in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's not.
And the book is actually an incredible satire in itself. And I was really disappointed when I saw it, because I was so looking forward to it, because I love the book so much. And so I was always had kind of this negative spot towards Starship Troopers, because I really wanted the book to be made. However, that being said,
satire.
That is exactly what they were going for. And for this list, it's a perfect choice. Yeah. Because it's exactly what they wanted. And all I could think is, medic! All right. Number ones. I think, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think there's probably one classic satire that is kind of like the godfather of all satires, which has got to be Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove.
Yes. Now, I left that off because I knew you'd have it on there.
Yeah. And I mean, from, you know, everything from the no fighting in the war room to him riding the bomb down at the end. It's just genius. I mean, the film, you watch it. I've seen the film so many times. I couldn't even count. And to see Peter Sellers playing, I think he plays four roles in the film. And I thought George C. Scott, aside from Patton, probably has never been better in his entire career. And it's just a brilliant film all around. So dark, so crisp, and it's Kubrick in fine form. I don't think you can talk about satires without having it somewhere on a list.
Exactly.
Now, your number one.
My number one is a film that you and me both really love, Dave. We saw it, I think, late in its piece, but Four Lions.
Oh, yes.
Just from, I think, one of the most interesting and aggressive looks at satire from that really kind of like it was just so topical at the time, but then also at the same time it was just so incredibly intense to watch this film go all over the place.
And here's a film that has such funny moments in it and yet leaves you so depressed at the end,
because but also thinking.
And thinking.
And that's what that's really where it hit me so hard, was just to see a film where at the end of it, it's a comedy that made you walk away not laughing.
Yeah, and you wonder how they even got this made. You know, it's a remarkable film. I really liked it. I remember sitting down watching it with my lovely wife, and she actually was having trouble watching it, because she was having trouble understanding the mentality.
Yeah.
You know, and I can understand that completely. You watch this film and you sit there and go, I don't understand you. Here's a guy who is a privileged person. He actually has middle class life with a lovely child and a lovely wife, and sits there talking about, you know, committing suicide and being a suicide bomber, being a martyr. And his wife's like, yes, dear, no problem. You know, and it's like, what the hell? You know, I don't understand this. No, great film. Great film and great choice for a number one. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. If you want to suggest lists to us, you can put those in feedback, or you can, you know, at any time write to us like these wonderful people who have left us feedback at feedback@filmactually.com. Or as I said before, we have a voice in line, which is 0280113167, or you can use our Skype ID, Geek Actually, all one word. Josh, I think that's a show.
I think that is a show, man.
I think we've reached an end. My God. That's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Well, it doesn't quite have an end yet because we got to say, Josh, where can people find more of you on the internet?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. It's full of all sorts of craziness. We finally have the Studio 33 videos back up, and you guys should go over and check that and everything else out while you're there.
Fantastic. And we will remind people that next week Richard will be back on the show, and we will be doing Dark Shadows, I believe. Is the film for next week, which is Depp and Helena Bonham Carter and... Yeah, she's in it, isn't she? Yeah, she is in it. And Tim Burton directing. Of course she's in it. She has to be in it. I think it's in the contract, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am going to try and find, over the course of this week, I don't know if I'm going to have much luck, but I want to try and find some of the original episodes of Dark Shadows. Dark Shadows is based on a very, very odd soap opera. From the 1970s, about a family living with a vampire. It wasn't a comedy. It was a soap opera, straight up drama, and very quirky, very odd. And I think they made like 1,000 episodes or something. I mean, it was a daytime
soap opera. Get out.
It was like a daytime soap opera, you know? And of course, Tim Burton's taken it and turned it into whatever he's turned it into. I will be very curious to see the film. I haven't seen the film yet. You have, but you can't talk about it because you're embargoed. I know that. I got the email. You're embargoed till tomorrow, I believe. So we'll talk about this in the next show. I will go see it. I'm curious, but I do want to see. I have very, 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 very vague memories of the original soap opera. So I just want to see an episode, even one episode, just to remind myself what this show was originally like. But yeah, I don't think it was ever really known much outside of the United States.
Didn't even know anything about that.
Not an export. I don't think that made it very far. We should mention that Richard can be found at therealbits.com or at DVDBits on Twitter. I can be found at geekactually.com or at David McVeigh on Twitter. And I think that's a show. I think we're done. I have no idea what music I'm going out on, but something will play in a few minutes and it'll probably sound really good. but I have no idea. Idea what I'm going to put at the end of the show at this point. We did open with a clip from The Princess Bride, which you should all go out and see because it's a great film. And that's it. Josh, we're going to say goodbye. I'm going to say go see more movies. What do I say? What does I say every night? I say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. It is getting late.
Yes, it is.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye, Josh.
All right, man. Bye.